From Noble Robot on East Hennepin Avenue in Lonely at the Top of Minneapolis, this is Nice Games Club, the show where nice game devs talk games and game development. I'm Ellen Burns-Johnson, and I make nice games.
I'm Stephen McGregor, and I make nice games.
And I'm Martha Croy. I, too, make nice games.
In this episode, we talk with Franny Eskenazi, CEO of Future Club, to discuss leadership in game dev. And so, if everyone is ready, let's start.
Franny, hi! I'm so glad that we finally have somebody from Future Club, aside from myself, on the episode. This is so exciting.
Right, because all this time we've been like, Steven, do you really have a job? I mean, I'm going to need to see some evidence. I need some corroborating witnesses.
Randy, let him know I do a good job.
He's working. He's making games, for real. Yeah. Thank you guys for having me on the show. I appreciate you inviting me over.
Yeah, of course.
We've talked on the show before about co-ops, which is what Future Club is.
Mm-hmm.
And we've talked before about managing a team, starting a project, being a creative lead.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But we've never really spoken to someone in charge.
Yeah.
And all the sort of, you know, what real leadership in this industry is, it's still kind of a mystery to a lot of us and to a lot of our listeners, I think. So we're thrilled to have you on. And I really expect, not to put any pressure on you, but I think we're going to break some new ground for the show.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm glad.
Awesome. Thank you, guys. Mm-hmm. Yeah, looking forward to it.
Yeah. So, Franny, do you want to tell listeners a little bit about yourself before we get started?
Sure. So I am Franny. I'm the CEO at Future Club. Before this, I worked at Lab Zero Games as a CEO and as a producer on a game called Indivisible. And then prior to that, I was at Riot Games for about 5 years, a little over 5 years. And so I've always kind of worked in production. I think, you know, Riot was like, prior to Riot, actually, my very, very first games, like real industry games job was, I was the receptionist at a studio called Pandemic Studios. Mm. They made like the original Star Wars Battlefront and Mercenaries, Saboteur. And so that was my first kind of experience with game development. I actually worked at the GameStop across the street from that studio and had like a lot of the devs that like worked at Pandemic would come to my store and like buy games. So I kind of knew a lot of people from just like, I was the girl at the video game store. So that's kind of how I ended up getting into games is that they like their receptionist moved into HR and I became the new receptionist and it worked out because I knew half of the studio already. But yeah, I got into production at Riot and really initially wanted to become an animator. I studied animation. And that was something I really like wanted to like be a Pixar animator someday. And then just sort of like my life just led me into games by accident. And I just really realized that I enjoyed the production role, which is very much like a support role. And a leadership role. And I think like that actually very much like defines for me, like how I view leadership is that it is a very support role, even though a lot of people see it as like, you're in charge, but really it's like, if you're doing a good job, I think you are there to like listen and help facilitate things so that your team can like do their best work. Mm-hmm. Actually like this sort of idea of like servant leadership is something that I think is like really, really important. And it helps teams more than, you know, someone who's like, I have this great idea. Let me tell you how to do it. So it's like, I kind of got a lot of my introduction into game development at Riot. And obviously like I was there for a period of time where there was a lot of growth. Mm-hmm. So I was able to see kind of like a very wide spectrum of like different types of leaders and different types of teams. And, you know, I think now, you know, having had the opportunity to work on like smaller teams and like a studio with multiple teams and the larger teams, I really actually really enjoy working with, you know, smaller core kind of like indie teams. It feels like it's just, there's a little bit more, it's a little bit easier to kind of like make decisions and like get things done a little bit quicker than once you're like a really large, you know, AAA studio.
Right, yeah.
So it's a very long-winded way of saying like, I kind of got into games by accident, got into production, and that kind of led me onto the path of like towards leadership. And yeah, I think, you know, for me, it's like, it's like what I enjoy about working in games is being able to kind of like support my team and provide kind of like some structure so that that there can be like all the great ideas can come you know, to the surface, and like we end up with a great product. So yeah, I guess that's my sort of overview.
Yeah, that I didn't know that. I knew you had worked at GameStop because I remember you bringing that up, but I didn't know that you had. I didn't realize how much progression that you've had to get to where you are today. And I also didn't realize that you worked at Riot when it was like starting to really grow and expand to a, so that you saw all the different types of leaders and stuff. I'm actually really curious how your opinions on how to lead was morphed and changed due to your work at Riot, seeing all those other leaders succeed and fail, probably fail a lot. I'm a little biased.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think like, honestly, I think it was my first introduction to sort of, I think having someone give me more sort of like autonomy over my work, even in the role of, you know, I was actually the very first like production coordinator who worked at Riot. I was one of the first like women on the dev team, and I was pregnant as well. So that was like, I was like the first pregnant woman at like Riot. Yeah, I think it was like around maybe less than 100 people when I joined back in 2010. And the game was very much like, I had never heard of it. I had never played League of Legends. It was not obviously like what it is now. It was just beginning to kind of get become like a household name, or not even. Actually, a lot of the people who had left Pandemic ended up at Riot. So I already knew a few people who worked there, who I had worked with in the past, who, you know, had kind of recommended me to be like, hey, they need help. And like, you're awesome. Cause I didn't really stay still at Pandemic when I was a receptionist. I was always trying to find other things to do and help the teams with. So I think people knew that, and they were like, hey, you know, like the tech team is kind of underwater and they need support. So, so I think that was like my first experience having someone kind of like go, hey, we don't know, this isn't like a role that we even know that exists, that we can kind of like, this role doesn't exist currently. We just know we need support. We need someone to come in and help the technical directors for each of the different kind of like aspects of the game. And so I reported to like the VP of like technology, and, you know, he was very much like, you know, define what this role is and then like improve upon it. So I think that idea of like being very driven and like self-directed, even in a role where typically, you know, like there were not a lot of like just producers, people were just like, here's a thing we need to do. So I kind of had to find my way and find like ways to support the team by just like going to meet. I'm going to go to this meeting. I'm going to take some notes. Like I would have meetings with the technical directors and be like, what are you struggling with? What can I help with? And start to just uncover patterns to then provide like ways to solve it problems.
Yeah.
So I think like that, that kind of freedom to do that, without necessarily, you know, oh, you report to another associate producer or another producer or something. It was kind of just like, we're trying to make something cool. And like, we need some support, but go figure out what that looks like. I think that, really provided me like kind of the perspective that I needed to thrive at that company. Mm-hmm. Because it is so like, they really did, especially at the point that I was in, where it was like still pretty small, you know, 100 people sounds big, but it's like for to make a whole League of Legends like game, like it was not very, when I left the company, it was like over 2,000 people. Right, so yeah. Like it, when I started, the art team was, you know, one person per discipline, literally it was like 7 people total. And when I left, it was nearly 300 people.
Wow.
So I got to there to see like that whole art department kind of grow into what it, and then now it's like, you know, even more. It's right. been several years I haven't worked there. It's been like 8 years or so since I left. So it's continued, you know, to develop. And I think even like the games that they make, you know, it's sort of, they're continuously improving. They had that mindset even with like their teams and like, you know, how they operate. It's just like, okay, we're gonna do what we need to do and then like continuously improve. So I think that really helped me because it was a double-edged sword. I'll say that because at the same time that there was freedom to like, just go like, go solve problems and like be useful. It was also very difficult to like, know if I'm doing a good job, right. if there's not like a, or like, yeah. what is my job description? Am I doing my job? Like, you know, who's like, how do I know if my performance is good? And so I think there was like that aspect of it that was challenging. But I think like, I did get to sort of, I eventually went from the tech team to the art department and kind of like, cause they knew I wanted to, you know, eventually get into animation. And as I started working with the different teams, I kind of realized, you know, production is this really interesting role because you have to know enough about what everyone on the team is doing and contributing. You don't have to be like the expert, but you at least have to know, you kind of have to become like this like sponge that absorbs all this knowledge and be yeah. able to facilitate communication between different people on the team.
Right.
You know, so that when people come to you with like, hey, this thing is blocked, like you can actually provide a way to like unblock them or, you know, create like, okay, we need to talk to this person. Oh, like, oh, there's an issue with this. I need to talk to this other person in this department. So I kind of realized my personality itself is very like, I'm very extroverted. I'm like, you know, throw me in a room with a bunch of strangers and I'm like, cool. I'm just going to go up to people and say like, hi, how's it going? I'm Franny. You know, like I don't have an issue kind of like just getting to know people that I don't know. And so I think that helped me be able to build relationships with people in that role and then be able to facilitate communication and facilitate like, you know, how do we optimize this thing? This thing is broken. Okay. What we need to go talk to. Like, I think one of the main things that I started on actually, when I first started working at Riot was like, they just didn't have anyone to like manage the art, like the outsourcing. They were outsourcing a lot of stuff.
Oh.
And so it's like making sure like do the contractors even have contracts or like, are they getting paid or, you know, how, like, there was a lot of things that were just, you know, it was very like Wild West. There was no structure in place because, you know, that didn't come until much, much later as the company matured, right? So being able to provide like, okay, we need to like have this thing tracked and there's like a process and like, what does that process look like? Actually building it as we were going was one of the main things that I was like helping. And those, again, that came from realizing and talking to people. What are you struggling with? What's the biggest problem you're having right now? You know, asking questions and like being curious about what are the ways in which, you know, this team is struggling so that you can help facilitate and support them and make their, at the end of the day, like make their lives easier so that they could actually like get the work that needs to get done.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there's just like so many pieces that you become like the glue that has to kind of help hold things together. And I do remember at one point, we eventually did get more people, like senior producer people into the pipeline. So it was easier to have like at least people to help guide you.
Yeah.
But one of them asked me, he's like, okay, well, you know, do you want to follow production or do you want to follow art? Cause like you kind of have to, at some point you're at a crossroads where you have to decide, you know, if you're going to go into production, there's a certain path. And if you don't, then, you know, you need to kind of like figure that out. And I actually ended up deciding that I really enjoyed being in that role and continued on that kind of like production path.
Mm-hmm.
So I think like that really helped me see like, okay, there's like a lot of different ways to manage teams, right? Like lots of different kinds of personalities. And I think I did have some really good examples of like, here's what good leadership looks like. You get to learn a lot from other people's mistakes, right? Like, here's, you know, I had my own challenges towards the end of like my career at Riot that I'm not going to get into, but that like definitely kind of made me realize, okay, maybe I've outgrown this place. I need to go, you know, somewhere else.
Yeah.
But all of the, like that whole experience, even though I have moments where it was like really negative, I also have like really positive moments as well. And so I feel like I was able to gain, you know, I just take the good lessons, you know, and go like, cool. Okay. This thing that this person did, it's a great lesson in good leadership. This mistake that this person made, that's something to remember to not do, you know? So I still see it as like a very valuable experience, even if it was, you know, at times difficult or challenging, just in for various different reasons. Right. I learned from, I think the very first manager I had though was very key in helping me like have that mindset of like, figure out where the problems, help solve them, and then figure out, okay, here's what I, and then like be able to repeat it. Because one of the other things was I was pregnant when I got hired at Riot. I didn't tell them that. I was like 6 months pregnant when I started working there. So it was kind of like, oh, they're going to find out eventually. And so luckily it wasn't doing it. They did find out and it was obvious. Mm. It was kind of like, okay, cool. You need to hire your replacement. Because like, and that was, I think, one of my very first like milestones, I think, in kind of like learning. Obviously, it was very scary because I didn't feel like I had that support. But at the same time, it was like, okay, now define all these things that you've been doing over the last few months, like actually put together like a job description and be able to like look at what you're doing and then explain it to someone else and then kind of train this other person and what your job is while you're gone. It was a really, you know, I think it was a good learning moment for myself, even if it was like, holy shit, what am I going to do? And I'm like, so like the method with which it happened and like the language that they used to explain it to me wasn't the best, but it was very much like, I think helpful to help me develop that skill of being like a self-starter or like very, you know, self-directed, which, mm-hmm. You know, I think is for the company at the time and the stage it was in, it was everyone kind of needed to have that mentality. So it, you know, it onboarded me onto that like train of thinking very, very early on, which I think helped me. And then maybe, you know, once it grew and had more structure, maybe it was like, there's less of that, but there's, you know, at the same time, probably a little bit more support.
A trade-off.
So I kind of got thrown into the deep end and kind of had to like figure it out.
Yeah. Well, what you're talking about there, that kind of makes sense though, because, you know, you are a leader in a company, but one of the things that we're mixing into this conversation is a talk about leadership in general. Mm-hmm. And I hear this a lot, you know, in a company as I started about 8 months ago, in a company much larger than anything that I had been in before. And have found myself in more leadership-oriented roles, I guess. But that's one of the things that the company leaders talk about a lot is that they want that, you know, they're trying to cultivate leadership at every level. And part of what that means, at least to me, is being able to deal with the unknown and to have the skills to look at something that is kind of messy and have a sense of how you can contribute to making it less messy. For the benefit of yourself and for others mainly. So that totally resonates with the way that I've been thinking about leadership, you know, that it doesn't necessarily mean you have to have like a C before the rest of your title or that you are formally in a leadership role. You know, you can bring that to anything that you're doing.
Yeah. And I think like one of the key things is like, you don't have to have all the answers, mm-hmm. you know. Like leadership is also about recognizing when you don't have the answers and when someone else should lead.
Mm.
One of the things I'm hearing is it's this producer focused take on leadership, right?
Yeah.
But I guess what I want to ask you about is that transition from producer roles to, you know, putting the C in front of your title. Because I think as a producer, you sort of became discipline agnostic, but then you also, as a result of that, you become sort of pan-discipline curious. And that includes things like HR and business and stuff that, that a CEO has to worry about that a producer in games might not be as naturally interested in. So walk us through that transition. Once you sort of got your sea legs as a producer, when did you want to sort of take the, you know,
just get your sea legs as a CEO?
Right, right. Ellen, it's the biggest smirk on her face right now.
I was happy with that one.
Your seat legs.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting because I don't think it was necessarily something I sought out pretty much. I mean, it was something that kind of evolved kind of naturally, I'd say, at the team that I was working with. You know, it was, this is after Riot. I had moved to, you know, working on Indivisible as a producer. Just sort of like recognizing that there, especially at the size that we were at, you know, we're under 20 people, full like staff, you know, and so much smaller team. Obviously, like multiple people have to wear different hats, and just recognizing that, like, you know, when there are things that are like at a cultural level are out of, you know, out of order in a way, it affects, you know, it affects the rest of the project. And so, you know, learning to deal with things like HR and the payroll and, you know, overall, like, you know, budget and all of that. And I think even just within that team, like coming in and kind of just like figuring out there are even like interpersonal issues that you have to help solve. I think a lot of it just kind of evolved, like I said, very naturally. You know, I was asked to step into this role just due to the fact that there were issues with, you know, the previous like person in that role. Yeah. So, which, you know, I'm not going to like get into necessarily all the details, but, you know, I think part of it is really just like recognizing that, it's, I think a lot of people assume that it's like, oh, now I'm in charge and I can just do whatever I want because I'm the CEO or I make all the decisions about this. But really, it's about just like being responsible for other people.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And being responsible for, you know, ensuring that things are all set up so that like the company can run effectively, so that the team can be effective. You know, if there are things that are like out of order, you know, and breaking down, then like there's only so much you can do before it's like it doesn't matter what your title is if you're not like fulfilling your role. And like, to me, leadership is less about telling people, you know, what to do, and you know, you are setting the example, basically. You are the role model for the team on how to behave as a member of the studio and how you communicate, how you talk to other people in meetings, how you show up to work, right? All of those things are, you're giving people examples of what, you know, and I think people who are not doing a good job of that might look like, well, they just, you know, sometimes they're in a meeting, sometimes they're not, or like they show up late, or, you know, they just like don't respond to things, or, you know, I think those are things where it's like, if you want your team to behave a certain way, you have to be able to model that. And not to say I'm perfect. I'm sure there are times that I've fallen short and I didn't communicate something, but I think I'm very aware of that. Like that's the responsibility that you take on as a leader, is like, you have to lead by example. There can't be rules for everyone else and then rules for you because you have a C in your name. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Or because you're the owner or whatever. It's like, you have to be the example of, and you have to, you know, I think even with like creative leadership or, you know, you're talking about like vision and, you know, you don't necessarily have to tell people, here's what you need to do. It's more of like, you're setting the direction. You're saying, here's where we're going. This is the general, you know, this is what good looks like. Here's like the aspirational, you know, North Star of where we want to be. And then, like, I need all of us to contribute to getting us there. How can we do that best? Yeah. You know, because you're not going to have all the best answers. You're just going to have your own perspective, which, you know, may based on experience or whatever, you might have a good perspective, but you're not going to, if you're not the one doing all the work, you can't also just know that. So part of it is like providing that direction and then asking the team, okay, cool, who's with me? Like, how do we do that? And giving people, delegating, okay, I need you to be responsible of this thing. I need you to, I don't know how we're going to do this, but you need to figure it out, right? And trusting that the people that you're putting in roles to and you're delegating that responsibility to will come up with that answer and come up with a solution. Like, you don't have to have all the answers. You just have to provide the direction and support and make sure, you know, it's like focus, purpose, and motivation is like the main things that I feel like a leader really contributes on a team is like, you know, make sure that things are taken care of so that your team can just focus on what they're doing. If they're worried about someone being a jerk to them or not getting paid on time or, you know, other things, then they can't focus on their work, right? So it's like on me to kind of make sure like, okay, is everyone able to like do their job well? What are the conflicts? What can I help smooth over? Where is there breakdowns of communication? And like looking into that and ensuring that there's a solution for it. And then, you know, providing like enough of a like purpose is like, okay, we all have a shared goal. You know, what is that goal? Is it clear to people what it is? And you know, and like the motivation is like, obviously like that aspirational, like here's where we want to get to, you know, and continuing to support people through that. I think it's like making games is really hard because so much of it is like, you know, it's unpredictable, mm-hmm. you know, yeah. you can't know if something like until you test things. And so, you know, it's the same, you have to be able to feel comfortable with unpredictability and uncomfortableness and kind of trusting that like, okay, you know, things aren't going to be perfect, but like, they don't need to be perfect. They just, you know, we'll kind of like make progress and, you know, do our best to get there without, you know, without killing ourselves. Basically.
Yeah, yeah. You
know, like that's the goal for me. It's just like, I don't want my team to be like burnt out or, you know, or to feel like, man, I'm doing all this work for what, for nothing, you know? And so I think that's even why, like, where we're at now with Future Club, you know, the fact that like, we are all equal owners and everyone is equally invested and people recognize these are what our roles are. And, you know, and it's, you're still managing a team, right? The fact that it's a co-op doesn't really like change, you know, the role as a leader, you know, if anything, like it's important to have people who are designated as leads within the teams to know that like, cool, someone is thinking about this major decision, because, you know, because if everyone is trying to lead, you know, then like it's not really going to work out, yeah. Well, right.
Yeah. No, I'm glad, the way that you put it earlier, I think says it best. Like, leadership is about facilitating communication between one another. And I think it's, you know, even more so valuable in a co-op setting, specifically because like we are all co-owners, right? Mm-hmm. And I appreciate that you instilled that in me right away when I first started, because I felt like I needed to report to you about things. And I do report to you about some things if I have an issue or something like that. But ultimately, like,
some things it keeps to himself.
No, maybe a little, not really. I'm talking to my boss a little bit, but I think it's really valuable to make sure that you, when you're in a leadership role, that you are the one taking charge of the thing that you're supposed to take charge of, and let other people who are supposed to take charge of other things take charge of other things. Like, I'm handling the programming side of stuff, and if that is interfering with animation in some way, then we have a dialogue about that, right? Mm-hmm. We have those dialogues all the time. It's the same kind of thing. And so like, I definitely feel that while I've been working at Future Club, that like communication, is easy. It's very easy compared to my previous jobs. So yeah, that has definitely felt good. I did want to ask though, specifically about like the differences in leadership between like a co-op and other business.
Mm-hmm. Like a more traditional hierarchical kind of structure.
Yeah. We've talked on the show before about how an ownership structure and a management structure are not the same thing.
Right.
And how they're very frequently confused when it comes to co-ops. Mm-hmm. But every co-op is different.
Yes.
Right?
Yes, that is true. That is true. I've learned that more and more.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, some co-ops are smaller too than like our team, where you know, if it's a handful of people, you know, like any decision that's an important decision, people can vote on, you know, whereas like I think our team is a little bit larger and we might not need to have everyone, or not everyone might want to even vote on every single thing that needs to happen. So I think that's where it's like, you know, we have a structure in place where there are like trusted leaders who are elected by the team, you know, to be in those positions. And there is a mechanism where if someone is, you know, like, I actually really like that there's an accountability within our team to say, you know, if I'm not doing my job well, like, I can, you know, there is a way for people to hold me accountable, right? Yeah. And to say like, this is a role that is a privilege to be in, not a right, mm-hmm. by default, mm-hmm. because I'm an owner. By default, I then get to, this is a privilege to be in this position, to be entrusted with making major decisions on behalf of the people who have elected you into this role. Right.
Right.
So to me, it's like, I think a lot of other studios, you know, when there is this structure where, you know, it is not a cooperative, where there's like a specific set of a few owners and then all the employees, right? There's no mechanism through which to hold those people accountable if they are doing harm to the company, or maybe not to the company in the terms of, you know, profits, but maybe in terms of like their employees or the team that they, you know, that they are hiring. You know, that's why I think it's a good method by which to provide a structure where, you know, we can minimize abuse of the employees and all these like horrible things that we've seen people talk about in games industry. That is something that like, I feel like having this type of structure, provides an alternative, you know, so that people don't like, if anyone ever has an issue with me, they don't feel like they can't raise it, or that they, oh, I have to like lose my job now because the CEO is a jerk, you know. It's like, there's a way to call it out, and there's a process, and there's, you know, a mechanism by which my voice can be heard and actually like, you know, like legally, you know, like listened to. Yeah. So, and I think it's like, you know, it was still pretty early on. Feature Club, we're coming up on our like third year now in September. It'll be 3 years since we started the company, which is awesome. I mean, I definitely am happy that it's, you know, we've been able to like make it last this long, and I hope that it continues for a long time.
Same here.
but you know, like, it's, I'm sure there are things that we haven't like encountered yet, and that we might future, but at least the structure we have in place, I think the framework where that we have for, you know, ensuring that the team is taken care of and is not abused, and that there's transparency in regards to how we operate, what, you know, financials, profit sharing, all these things, because it's like the productivity of the team, you know, at the end of the day, like the ones doing all the work should be able to like reap the rewards, right? And so I think a lot of, you know, I feel like our team has gone through a lot, and I would like to get to the point where it's like, cool, we could put out a game, we're making money, and then the people who made the game actually get to like benefit the most. Yeah. Not like some random executive that doesn't know what the day-to-day, like what it takes to make that profit, right?
Yeah.
So we'll see. I mean, I believe in the structure that we have, and I hope to see like more co-ops, you know, start to pop up. But you know, again, I think it'll hold up. Like I said, who knows what will happen in the future? But so far it's been working really well. And so I guess in terms of how it compares, it's really just about transparency in communication and like accountability is like a huge part of it. You know, it's really hard to hold an owner accountable legally.
Yeah.
Right. It's been a little while, but that's why it's been a little while, because Ellen keeps doing that. No, Glom is out and it's available. We've talked about this on the show before, but it's a fun game that you can play.
We made it on the show.
The basic premise is that you draw from three decks,
yeah,
a phrase, a rule, and a goal.
Yes.
Phrase has a common phrase that you've heard a million times before.
Mm-hmm. Like, can I eat that?
Exactly. And the rule is some restriction on what a phrase could be, like no E's.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the goal, which says how many points if you do a certain thing, like the most vowels or the shortest words or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You need to rewrite that phrase following that rule to get the goal.
Yeah.
It's a rare objective word game.
Yes.
That you can play with your pals, and it's both thinky and then also wild.
Mm-hmm.
Very funny.
Which we've heard from reviewers and commenters is a pretty rare combination.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're really proud of it. We've talked about it on the show before, but if you haven't heard us talk about it, Ellen?
Oh, Glom.
Well, she's doing that, Steven. The URL?
Yeah, nicegames.club/glom.
Challenging. It's challenging. I mean, we talked about, I think we say it every other podcast, but you already said it for us, Franny, which is making games is hard, you know? And
yeah.
I think one of the things that makes it hard is that, you know, kind of by definition, you're building something that hasn't been built before.
Yeah.
Even if you're working within a genre that's well established and you're working off of tropes that everyone is familiar with, you're still building something that didn't exist before. And so it's a creative endeavor. You're kind of forging through unknown territory, and oftentimes you're doing it with a team of people who hasn't necessarily worked together before. Mm-hmm. So, like, it's definitely a build the ship while you're trying to sail it kind of situation.
Yeah.
And I think it takes good leadership to get through those waters without having people fall overboard. If that makes sense, like it's difficult to make the journey and create something complete. And also prioritize the well-being of the people who are doing the work. And I think it's one of the big challenges and topics discussed in, you know, and amongst leaders today is how do you achieve that consistently, you know?
Yeah.
The other factor is it's hard enough to make a game, but it's also incredibly risky.
Yes.
And so from the top, you have to decide, like, okay, are we going to build on our past successes? Are we going to forge something new? And there's creative risk, and then there's financial risk. I mean, there's existential risk when all these things are added together.
Yeah.
And so as a CEO, and also accountable to an employee base of co-owners, mm-hmm. how do you decide on what to take a risk on? And how do you think about plan Bs, and when is it time to go all in? And I mean, it's an unanswerable question because everybody faces it, but how do you approach it?
That's a good question. I think, obviously I think at this point now that I've been in games for a while, I've kind of developed, I've learned, you know, it's been hard to learn, but I've learned to listen to my gut a lot. I think before I used to maybe ignore it, but I think listening to your gut on something is really usually a strong indicator of like, pay attention to this. And even if it doesn't necessarily mean I'm going to follow it all the time, it helps me decide. I think in terms of choosing where to take risks and how to do things. A lot of, honestly, like I have a lot of trust with my team. I obviously have my own thoughts and like I said, my own gut about things. But I think like bringing it to, you know, the other leads or to other members of like our board about where, you know, where, here's where we're going and here's what I think we should do. I think being able to like bounce those ideas off of other people is really important, and having like, you know, having the I guess the strength to ask for help when you're not sure, right? Mm-hmm. It's like I don't expect to have all the right answers. I'm doing my best as much as anyone else. And so I think it comes down to like being able to have that trusting relationship with people to provide them like you're as honest, you know, a perspective as you can. Like we've had conversations where I had to be like, hey guys, like I feel like we're going to have to do this really hard thing, you know, whether it's like pay cuts or whatever, so that we can kind of get through this hurdle. And here's how I think we can do it. It's scary. You know, it's scary to even like put those things out there because you don't know if people are going to be like, cool, or hey, you know what, I'm just gonna go get a regular job at somewhere else. And like, you know, there's always that possibility that people will disagree with you and not necessarily follow your lead on things. But I think it's kind of just having that, I guess to me it is a little bit of like the strength to kind of just stand in front of people and just be very honest and open about, you know, here's what we're facing and here's what I think we should do. And what do you guys think? I think whenever I have had doubts or fears or, you know, feeling like there is a risk to take and hey, it affects all of us. So we all need to kind of be aware, that I kind of like rely on the team to provide their perspective because, you know, we are a team and it isn't just me, you know, like, yes, I'm the leader with the C in front of their title, but we're all in this together, you know? And, so I think, yeah, I think trust is really important. And, you know, the way you foster that, I guess, on a team is just through a lot of, a lot of like repetitive moments where you kind of like, have to just trust people. I don't know how to explain it. You only get good at it by doing it.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Reinforcing it, you know, that like you said, right. Repeating. It's not just like to get a habit, it's actually to build the strength of the organization, right?
Yeah.
Right.
That's really interesting and I think underscores it really feels like one of the most fundamental differences between the more like top-down hierarchical approach to leadership versus kind of this more like, I don't want to say bottom-up really, because I don't know if that's really the right way to describe it, but this kind of servant leadership that you're describing is that trust is authentic and it comes through time and consistency and experience from, you know, from the team having those moments with you as a leader. And then just practicing that relationship and seeing you show up and do the work consistently and consistently listen and consistently, you know, take on different perspectives and reflect back what you're hearing and have it work out. I mean, that there's no shortcut to that. Mm-hmm. But sometimes organizations try to make a shortcut by saying, well, this person's title is this and therefore you have to listen to what they say.
Yeah.
You know, there's no shortcut to trust is basically. Like,
yeah,
this distillation of that.
Yeah, the opposite of that is like leadership by memo, right? Where you just sort of say what's going to happen. But if you're out there facilitating buy-in from the rest of the employee base and you get that, then the next time you need to make a difficult decision, it's a little bit smoother. And people know like, oh, I know that our boss is seeking our input and our support. But I'm actually don't have a strong opinion on this. So I'm going to just, I will trust. And so that's a big part of it is actually making a more efficient operation. Even though you are giving everybody a little bit of say at some, you know, via whatever mechanisms you're using, the more you show that you're willing to seek out that buy-in, the easier it is to get it in the future, I think. Right. And when you do need to make a decision that is your decision, it's, you know, you don't have to put it, you know, to a vote all of the time because you get implicit trust over time.
Yeah, exactly. Hmm. Yeah. I mean, there have been a couple instances where, you know, even just like big decisions where, you know, it kind of had to be my call, I still sought out people, each team member's perspective, to just understand the lay of the land before, you know, ultimately making that call. And with the knowledge that it's like, okay, this might not everyone might like this, you know, and I have to be willing to accept that if, you know, I think there's always a risk of like, you know, no one is married to this job, you know, it's not like a forever relationship. Like if you're just like, I don't like what this company has become, you can leave or anyone can leave. And so there's a little bit of like that fear on my end sometimes when it's like, we got to do this, you know, of like knowing that like someone might walk away and still having, you know, the courage to be like, I think this, we should do this, you know, and here's why I think this is a good idea. And I think like providing, I think that's what I really like about working in this type of environment where there is so much transparency around what's going on. Why are we making these decisions? This is what we're signing on this deal. Here's all the, you know, here's all the details of it so that everyone is aware. Is that like, you know, I don't know. I think it provides an insight that like, to me, it's like a CEO. It's such a, like, it can be so like a black box. And so providing more insight, here's what it is. And here's what I'm dealing with. It also like, I don't know. It helps me feel like at least, you know, at least everyone is informed and understands the context of why this is happening. And then, you know, and if they disagree with it, they're totally within their right to do so. And if I'm wrong, you know, they have a way to like remove me if I'm not the right person to be in this role anymore, you know? And so, I think that's the biggest difference that I've seen. And I honestly, I think I prefer it because I think, obviously, like you can't have like a Riot Games, like thousands of people company, maybe this way, or maybe you can, I don't know. I wouldn't try it. It seems like, but I think at the scope and the size that our team is at now, you know, we might grow a little bit more as well, but I feel like we at least have a structure in place where, you know, where like there is that understanding from people of like, you know, that these decisions are not kind of just being made arbitrarily. Like I take my role and responsibility for the other people on my team really seriously. And I like recognize that, like, you know, it's a scary position to be in sometimes, you know, like, And it can be a little lonely as well, you know, and sometimes there are other people that I seek out advice from who are in similar roles. I've been really lucky to join like a Discord of other like women C-level executives within games. And I have access to resources for providing, you know, perspectives on that. And even just like other, you know, other heads of like studios, right? Not just necessarily women, but yeah, I think a lot of it I just kind of like learned as I've gone about it, and I've tried my best to have an idea of like, this is the type of environment that I would like to provide and work in, and then showing up and like backing it up with how I interact with my team every day to build it. Right.
Yeah.
because like it's really easy to be like, we want to be like this and this and this, but then if the people coming day to day are actually like living the opposite of that, it's kind of hard. I kind of goes back to kind of like being that example of like what your culture should be and what you want your culture to be. It's really easy to say we are this, we're diverse, we're blah, and but then at the end of the day, like you're not backing it up with action.
Yeah.
And so I think for me, it's like that's what I, you know, I try to do as best as I can. I don't know if I'm doing a really fantastic job or anything, but I'm trying.
I mean, so. Speaking from myself, I think you're doing a fantastic job.
Oh, thank you.
I'm going to be gushing about your whole dang show. So get used to it.
I'm not like fishing for it or anything. No. So
and he's not putting on a thing for the, you know, for the public.
No, I am not.
We've heard from him before about how he enjoys your leadership style,
mm-hmm.
and how it's something he's never experienced before.
Really haven't.
And it's a breath of fresh air.
It really is. Yeah. It just feels very, I just feel like I have a lot of control in my life in ways that I did not experience before, just due to the fact that I feel supported due to your leadership, Franny. So I do very much genuinely appreciate it. And I guess I want to say this on the show.
Hey.
Can't take it back now.
You had brought up, we had a one-on-one the other day, and you had brought up that you read somewhere that like being a leader of a bunch of employees is a lot like being a parent to kids.
Yeah.
So I'm curious what that means.
Yes. I definitely think that like as I've had to raise my kids who are now like 5 years old, it's, you know, I think it's very much like my leadership skills help. Like, I don't know if they help me become a better parent or being a good parent helps me become a better leader. I think they're very interconnected.
Mm-hmm.
I think it goes back to like that idea of like being an example and like modeling the, you know, what you're trying to do to, you know, like with my kids, it's like, I've, you know, I try to help them learn how to behave by, you know, modeling that behavior. And it can be really hard sometimes when they're driving you absolutely crazy. cool. You know,
yeah.
But it's like and learning how to be an effective communicator, like even just explaining what you need them to do in a very clear way so that they can follow where you're going, and not like not judging them for, you know, for needing that support. I think there's a lot of similarities, and you know, I think we should have more, you know, parents be leaders. I definitely, you know, I don't know if I told you, Stephen, but like I had a daughter previously who was, you know, when I was pregnant at Riot, she unfortunately had a very serious genetic disease and she passed away when she was 2. She was always in and out of the hospital. And you know, that was my first experience being a parent, and it was, you know, it was very shocking because it's like, it's not a typical, you know, experience of like, you know, having to like, we were in the hospital since she was 2 months old till, you know, she passed at 27 months. So it's like having that stress for that long, and dealing with that and, you know, advocating for my kid at the hospital, with the doctors and the nurses and everything. It's like, it was not, it just wasn't the same as like, you know, taking care of a kid who is healthy and like who, like 2 kids, right? I have twins, right? So who are healthy and who are like putting things in their mouth and like, you know, and like going crazy. And so it's like challenging in a different way. Yeah. But with my kids now, they are very, very, you know, determined and very active and sometimes stubborn. And so like helping them understand like, no, well, like you can't climb on this furniture because you will hurt yourself. You know, I already had one of them already broke his feet.
Oh, buddy.
Stairwell.
Yeah.
So it's like some things, you know, he's going to have to learn, you know, natural consequences. Learning how to properly communicate what you need from someone, what you expect from someone, and then developing that trust, you know, I think it's all very, very connected. And I think those skills overlap a lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's helped me learn how to even regulate my own mm-hmm. feeling. Mm.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Yeah. Yeah.
And sometimes recognizing like, okay, I should not be here. I need a moment for myself. I need a time out for me, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like, I think when I was earlier on in my career, when I would see something that I felt like was an injustice, you know, I was very vocal about like, no. And, you know, and I think those are things where it's like, I look back now and I'm like, I think I have a better handle on how to communicate those feelings in a way that, you know, helps people not focus on just the outburst, but it helps them actually see your perspective and your point of view. And so, I don't know, maybe it's just part of like maturing as well, and like, you know, getting older in general.
More experience. That's what I mean. Maturity comes from experience, but also reflecting on that experience and getting feedback on it. But I think what you've said totally makes sense. You know, it's a different audience. Like, from what I understand, Future Club is not run by 5-year-olds.
No, right. Not 5 years old.
Right, exactly.
I mean, but game devs are children.
Also true.
Well,
so it's a little, it depends on how you look at it.
But you know, it's the same skills. It's just applied in a different context, you know, what it comes down to.
Well, we find all the time when we talk to people who talk about multiple disciplines, mm-hmm. either they work in multiple disciplines or they interact with people of multiple disciplines that they're not familiar with.
Yeah.
People are always surprised to find how similar things are.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And it's not always that things are exactly the same. It's that one lens can help you see the other thing in a new way. And so it doesn't matter how disparate the two things are. Mm-hmm. Viewing one through the other lens can be really, really useful and very practical as well, more than you'd expect.
So I think my last question on the list is, you know, distilling this conversation down to just maybe a point. What advice do you have for other leaders out there in the games industry?
Hmm. You think?
60 seconds on the clock.
take your time.
Yeah. What advice would I have for other leaders? I would say don't underestimate the power of like listening more than you talk. Because it's less about what you say and more about the space that you create for people to express themselves as well on your team. You know, there might be some really amazing ideas from people who you would least expect it, but if you didn't take the time to provide them the space or the opportunity to express those ideas, then you're missing out, you know? So like, It's so important to, yes, provide direction and guidance and support, but sometimes just listening to people and what their needs are, and like be curious about, you know, about what your team cares about, because there might be like a huge gold mine of things, you know, on your team, but if you don't take the time to acknowledge and listen and make space for that, you'll just lose out on it. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I think that's something I try. That's something that I try to do. Like that's something that I'm, you know, conscious of. And I wish more leaders were aware of, you know, based on my experience and not, it's not leader. Like when I worked at places where I was not the leader, I wish the more people were more conscious of that.
Yeah.
I think it's so important. Like just making your team feel heard, can do so much for like your relationship, you know, and for the kind of like, productivity, you know, on the team is like more so than like any other, you know, perks or whatever. It's like, if you feel heard, you'll want to make more of a difference and to be, you know, more involved and to be there, you know, on the team. So, I don't know if that's advice or more of just like something good to keep in mind.
The best advice probably is that second.
Yeah.
Thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Absolutely.
That's our show. For show notes and links on today's conversation, go to our website, nicegames.club. Visit us on social media. Blah, social media. At Nice Games Club, where Dale posts about game dev resources and the time it takes to make a scroll bar. It
takes so long, you guys.
So long.
Reply on the various platforms or email us contact@nicegames.club. Nice Games Club is on Patreon. Support the show and get stuff, including ad-free episodes. Ad-free episodes! Sign up at patreon.com/nicegamesclub. And if you want to keep things more casual, just stop by nicegames.club/discord and say hello using those cool little Giphy guys. Next week, we'll be looking at cheating again. Again. But that's it for this week.
So, until we start again, remember to
play nice
and make nice.
It's lunchtime at Tim Hortons, and we're serving up a special deal just for you. Our new $5.99 lunch deal includes your choice of any lunch sandwich and a side of crunchy kettle chips. Because what's lunch without a little crunch? And the sandwich choice is all yours, like a ham and Swiss, Chipotle chicken wrap, BLT, and more, made to order just the way you like it. Tim Hortons' new lunch deal. Simple, delicious, and just $5.99. Now that's a good deal. Only at your neighborhood Tim's. U.S. only. Price and participation vary. Terms apply.